It's really, really lovely to see you all and to be here with you today to share some practice. I normally am calling in from Arcata, California, about 300 miles north of Spirit Rock, but today I am in Colorado. I'm actually here in Boulder, Colorado, visiting my son and just having some summertime in the mountains. And so I'm in a different place. And one of the things that I love to do as we get started is to chat in where we're all coming from. Maybe take a few minutes to look at the screen, see who's here. You probably have some friends or some Sangha members that you recognize because you see each week or whenever you come. And it's always fun for me to see people who I know or people who are new to me. So I really invite you, let's just take a minute to chat in where we are all coming into. And you can chat into everybody. Nice. There's Audrey from France and San Francisco, Asheville, Santa Rosa, New Mexico, Vancouver. Susan's here from Duluth. Penguins First Nation, Manitoba. Beautiful. Hi, Ron. Nice to see you again. Iowa and Switzerland. Thank you for coming. Isn't this just a pleasure to be able to know and to just see how wide our Sangha is? Uli is here from UK, Ottawa. Wonderful. The Algonquin Anishinaabe territory. Beautiful. I wish that I knew what unceded land I'm sitting on right now, and I am going to find out. Normally, I call in from the Wiat land. Okay, so let's just enjoy that greeting of each other. Thank you for being here, everybody. It's really I've been looking forward to this time of practice and seeing you all again. So the way our morning will work is we'll begin with an arriving meditation so we can really settle into this time of practice. And then we will talk with each other a little bit. I'll offer some short Dharma thoughts before our longer meditation. We'll have a meditation that's 25 or 30 minutes. We'll have a break, some announcements, and then we'll come back for a Dharma talk at the top of the hour and certainly have enough plenty of time to talk with each other. Sound good? I hope so. All right, so please find a posture that supports you, that you can come into an arriving meditation. And whether you close your eyes or you let your eyes stay open, turning the awareness inward. I like to close my eyes because when I do, I can sense more into the body. The sense of touch, noticing the places my body is connected to the chair, my feet on the floor. And the listening, the quality of the listening shifts when I turn the awareness inward. It becomes more present, more acute. A little more sensitive. You might even notice smells or tastes as you settle in. And noticing the state of heart today, just how you are right in this moment, as well as the state of mind. Connecting to whatever you're noticing right here. Inviting each inhale to be an arriving, and each exhale a settling right into this moment. And in the settling and resting into this moment, there's a letting go that happens, a trusting of the practice itself. The practice meets us right where we are. We meet the practice right where we are. Let's settle in. If you notice any holding or constriction in the body, see if you can let that go any amount. Perhaps loosening of the jaw, dropping the shoulders, softening the muscles of the chest and the belly so there's room for the breath. And just breathe and know you're breathing. Sit and know you're sitting, arriving. And even though we've just begun, in this arriving and settling, can you sense into a quality of stillness that's already here? It's mostly always already here, even though it gets covered over with so much life, so much busyness, so much outward attention. So sensing in, noticing if there's any amount of stillness that's already showing up. Gordon Hempton, who's an acoustic ecologist, says, silence is not the absence of something, but the presence of everything. It's the presence of time undisturbed. It can be felt within the chest. Silence nurtures our nature, our human nature, and lets us know who we are. Left with a more receptive mind and a more attuned ear, we become better listeners, not only to nature, but to each other and ourselves. Silence is not the absence of something, but the presence of everything. And it's through that window of silence, of presence, that we get to know a deeper and deeper peace, maybe a quality of home. Just to offer you a reflection question for this shorter meditation. For you, Where do you find or how do you experience the deepest peace, a sense of home? Where do you find or how do you experience the deepest peace or a sense of home? Just drop that question in, see what comes back. Welcome back. I'm always moved by these moments of a meditation practice, even if my mind or heart are restless or my body is itchy, that there's a way in which I can tap into that quiet that feels like it's waiting just to have the opportunity to come forth. So that question, how do you get that sense of home, or where do you find that deep sense of peace? Would anybody like to share what came up for you from that? And you can use the raised hand function or chat it in. Anybody feel like saying? In nature, driving in my car. I get it about that, about both. Kayaking alone in a salt marsh. Nice. Yes. Beautiful. On the other side of self-forgiveness and acceptance. Yeah. This. Yeah. Right here. This is part of why we show up. Because we do this together. It's so important. Walking my dog. Yeah. When I stop to pause. Yeah. I think it's lovely to hear from each other these experiences of where we find that peace, that sense of home. Because if, as you read through that chat, or heard that, remembering my source. Yeah. Hopefully you can relate to each other, that we can all relate. And there's a way in which we say, oh yeah, me too. Me too. Or, oh, that would be nice. I should learn to kayak. I mean, that might be a thought that comes up, but we start to get this collective sense of a shared peace, a shared sense of home. And that's really an important part of our practice. So I want to talk a little bit about everyday meditation is an opportunity to retreat, to take refuge, to find renewal. I recently taught a week-long retreat, and we've been really thinking about the practice of retreat and that it's true for a lot of people that going on retreat isn't accessible, and that this right now coming to online Sangha is the retreat. And it is, because we are actually taking time to come into ourselves, to come into practice. And so it doesn't have to be an experience of literally physically going away to experience these deeper moments of quiet and peace. So to relate to, I want to just offer some ways to relate to our sitting practice, our Sangha practice online, is that you've already given yourself permission to take time, this gift that it is to yourself, this quality of self-care. So to know that that is a beautiful in and of itself, that act of generosity just coming to class today for yourself and for the rest of us, because we get to see each other. So, you know, this is, we're showing up for each other. And this is a practice of pausing and savoring and settling and allowing a reconnecting internally, which strengthens our awareness, the connection in our bodies and our breath and our hearts and in our minds. One time I heard somebody say, before he was going off into some extended practice time, I'm going to go listen to my bones, listening to my bones. And I think it's true. I've never forgotten that expression. And I think that's that quality of that inward settling. What do our bones have to teach us? So much, so much, when we listen deeply into ourselves. So letting this be a time of cultivating this internal awareness, but also sensing into the solitude and the silence, that the more I practice, the more I find it's already there. It's really just a matter of allowing it to have its own voice. And then trusting the practice, the time we spend in practice, and knowing its value. Have you ever questioned, oh, what am I doing? What am I doing in this meditation practice? Is this really working? You know, am I just, you know, disappearing from my life? Or am I tapping into something that is profoundly important? And hopefully the latter. This is from Thoreau, from Walden. Sometimes in a summer morning, having taken my accustomed bath, I sat in my sunny doorway from sunrise till noon, wrapped in a reverie amidst the pines and hickories and sumacs, in undisturbed solitude and stillness, while the birds sang around and flitted noiseless through the house, until by the sun falling in at my west window or the noise of some traveler's wagon on a distant highway, I was reminded of the lapse of time. I grew in those seasons like corn in the night, and they were far better than any work of the hands would have been. They were not time subtracted from my life, but so much over and above my usual allowance. I think that is a really important piece, this last sentence. I grew in those seasons like corn in the night, and they were far better than any work of the hands would have been. They were not time distracted from my life, but so much over and above my usual allowance. Does it ever feel like that for you, that you can come into a time of practice and know in your deepest place how valuable this is? So much over and above my usual allowance. What we gain from sitting quietly with each other, ourselves, it's a big deal. So we trust the value of our practice and practicing with others, knowing something good is happening here. You know, it's not something really good is happening, and to take that in. And to further the point of what does it mean to experience that silence isn't the absence of everything, but the presence of everything, taking the whole thing in. This is a piece from Zenju Earthlin Manuel. She's a Zen priest, and she was in the Bay Area for a very long time. She's now in Santa Fe, and she has a new book out called The Deepest Peace, Contemplations from a Season of Stillness. It's a beautiful book. I highly recommend it. She says, to taste a pine nut is to taste a pine tree. To listen to a leaf fall is an uninterrupted conversation with the earth. To dedicate 24 hours a day to listening is not a sacrifice. Listening is the lifeline to the deepest peace possible. There's never any time lost in a day spent listening. So true. Can we keep listening, listen a little bit more, a little deeper, with a little more, I was going to say patience, the sense of just being here? Can we just be with whomever we're talking to? You know, that experience of being in a conversation and preparing or rehearsing what you're going to say before the other person finishes speaking? I see nodding. We all know this. We all know it. We're toppling forward. We're getting way ahead of ourselves all the time because we're in our own minds. But when we actually listen without an agenda and be with another person and just give them our presence, and what if we even paused before we responded to be able to really take that person in? That is compassionate listening. That's the beauty of a mindful practice, of where it can go when we don't have to rehearse or prepare, because when we do that, we've really stopped listening. We're listening to our own thoughts. So you can take that as a practice. What is a listening practice for you? For me, it's to notice my mind preparing a response and let it just be suspended for a few minutes and know the value of this deeper listening. So I wanted to offer you these thoughts around silence and solitude and the value of practice, and to really honor each one of us choosing to be here today, dedicating ourselves once again to the practice of awareness and love, non-harming and wisdom, or as Ram Dass said, loving awareness. And that's really what we're doing. So as we settle in, take a few breaths. If you'd like, let the eyes close. Otherwise, a soft gaze downward. See if you can let the exhale be a little longer than its natural length as a way to drop in, holding just enough energy in the back of the body to stay awake and upright, attentive, softening the whole front of the body so there's room for the breath to move, so there's room for the heart to breathe, to relax. Finding that place in your own body where you feel the breath the most. Perhaps it's the belly or the chest, or the way the air goes in and out of the nostrils. Sensing into the motion the body makes in response to breathing. And if you like, that can be where you settle the mind for this meditation. Or if the breath is not the place for you, see if you can find a different place, perhaps the sense of the feet on the floor or the base of the body connected to the furniture or the floor, wherever you are. The sense of touch. Or if you have a different practice, do that. Coming back over and over again when the mind naturally drifts off. Returning, beginning again. Being gentle and kind with yourself. Just come back and begin again. Sensing the subtleties of the inhale and the exhale, whether it's deep or shallow, long or short. Breathing, noticing if there's any tightness anywhere in the body, inviting that area to soften just to the degree that you can. Meeting yourself right where you are, knowing that's just right. These beautiful instructions from Ajahn Amaro. Let the mind and body assume the natural ease and peace that is the natural ease and peace of the mind and body. Only attending to that which disturbs this natural ease and peace. And the attending is just the acknowledgement, the soft mental noting, restlessness, grocery list making, whatever it is, and then come back, sensing into that inner stillness, that deeper peace. Let the mind and body assume the natural ease and peace that is the natural ease and peace. Mind and body. And we'll sit quietly. if the mind has drifted, as it may have, let's come back. Notice if there's any tightening, constriction, bringing some breath to that area. And as you exhale, letting go a little more into any emerging stillness, this sense of this deeper peace that we invite every time we sit quietly. And there may be other thoughts or heart energies that are difficult or challenging. And just let them be as they are, not needing to fix or change anything. Just allowing any amount of comfort to be present, comfortable mind, comfortable breath, comfortable body, beginning again. getting a little closer now to the sense of ease and peace. Any amount that has bubbled up that you're aware of. And just as water finds the path of least resistance, welcoming and inviting this peace and ease to find its own path of least resistance within you, letting it spread throughout the heart and mind and body. Anywhere it wants to go. Opening these pathways within. Letting this stillness and ease and peace pervade your whole being. Every cell. Reaching the outer limits of the body. Maybe even going beyond the limits of the body. So this ease and peace not only fills you internally, but it surrounds you externally. Being held in this field of ease and peace in yourself, and in the presence of others, in their own fields, creating a larger field of ease and peace that we're all a part of. Again, from Zenju Earthland Manual, a poem. Silence leads to the interior where moss grows in layers. Bamboo sinks itself into you, in your innermost earth. The deep speaks. It does not think. It calls, go unafraid into the dark, into life, without a doubt that the heart is open. Silence leads to the interior where moss grows in layers. Bamboo sinks itself into you in your innermost earth. The deep speaks, it does not think. It calls, go, unafraid into the dark, into life, without a doubt that the heart is open. So bringing this quality of the heart, this open, kind heart, into your awareness now. Sensing in, knowing how good this practice is that nurtures our awareness, our kindness, our wisdom and love. And now we'll move into this time of offering blessings out as a group. And if you would like to offer a wish, a thought, so we can all share in this with you, for any being in your life who you are celebrating or consoling, you're welcome to unmute yourself and just say who you're thinking about. And I'll begin. I'm thinking about my dog, Olive, who is a 12-year-old German Shepherd who is struggling with some heart disease, and we are supporting her in her old age as she moves through it. Who are you thinking about? Tom, go ahead. You can just begin.
Hi. I'm sending metta to my sister who suffers from dementia, and she's in a care facility right now. And I'm also thinking of my friend and groomsman at my wedding, Jim, who had a swimming accident many years ago, and he's paralyzed in a wheelchair. And I'm sending metta to him as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No need to raise your hand. You can just unmute yourself and begin to speak.
I'm thinking of my friend Carolyn, who has MS. She's quite elderly, recently fell in her home and broke her shoulder and has needed substantial assistance to carry on with her daily life. And she seems to be getting it and healing well. And I hope that continues for her.
I'm thinking, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Thank you, Heidi. I'm thinking of my granddaughter who flew to Jackson Hole this morning. She's 16 and she's going on a backpacking adventure through Yellowstone and the Tetons with eight other teenagers. And I'm just wishing them safety and protection, and that it's a really successful experience.
Wonderful. How exciting. Yeah.
Can I send metta to my dear mother, who at 89 is taking really good care of my 90-year-old dad in his, it's dementia, but they're doing really, really well. And I just send them so much love and compassion and metta.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'd like to send metta to a couple of gentlemen who are both acquaintances of mine. One is a young man about 40 years old who just had triplets, I think. I attended his wedding a few years ago. They found that he had cancer, a rare form of cancer, and he just had surgery this week where they removed just about every organ of his body that he could afford not to live with. I mean, spleen, appendix, gallbladder, everything, because everything was cancerous, but he was on chemo, and apparently he's going to be okay. Pretty unbelievable surgery. And the other is a gentleman who I knew a couple of decades ago, who my daughter is friendly with his daughter, and he has some type of rare disease that I couldn't begin to tell you guys the name of it, but it's a terminal disease, and it's dementia, and it's kind of like ALS, and it's going to terminate his life on this planet within the next year. And so I want to send love to both of those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm thinking of Johnny, my Dharma friend, who is going through a very heavy surgery today.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Uh, I'm thinking of my friend Maria, who is very close to her mother, who just passed away.
Thank you.
I'm thinking of my mother, who has really bad arthritis in her knees, and she's adjusting to that. And so I'm just thinking of her.
Yeah. I'm thinking of my friend Shannon. She was my college roommate, and since January she's been struggling with breast cancer and has BRCA, so has had several surgeries and just finished radiation yesterday. So think about her as she now is done with her treatment and just is in recovery.
Thanks, Wendy.
I'm sending blessings to my best friend, Becca, who has 3 children under 6, and all of them are sick with cold right now. So I'm sending them metta and good health.
Yeah, thank you. That's hard. Hard.
I'm thinking about all the fires here in California and Oregon and the huge human pain and the pain of the natural world and the implications it has for our planet as the planet warms and all of our lives and all living creatures are displaced and hurt by the planetary situation.
Thank you, David.
I will appreciate the physician committee for responsible medicine to support the patient, the families, and patient to pass through the process of their life.
Hello?
Yes, please.
I would like to send metta to my 28-year-old son, Abduwali, who is suffering with some emotional trauma. I want him to heal. I send blessings to him and want him to hang in there.
Wow.
And be strong. And let them know that it gets better.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we hold each other in this very wide heart of compassion, that we do this together and we listen to one another's prayers, really, about each other's lives. And it's a powerful place to cultivate this love, this compassion, this holding, and how much we truly are connected and in this life together, this Dharma life, our lives. So thank you, everybody. Let's come back at 15 after the hour. Let's take a pause, and then we'll see you in 6 minutes. Thank you. Okay, let's meet again. Come back. See if people are coming back from break. Hey, Peg, nice to see you. And there's Hilda, who's great, and Jane. Some familiar people. Very sweet. Okay, so let me just move my screen there a little bit there. So some of you know, maybe all of you know by now, that I really love poetry. And I love the practice of poetry, of reading it and bringing it into the Dharma, because I think that what poetry does is it becomes a vehicle for understanding and articulating our lives, maybe sometimes in ways that we can't on our own. But a poet has a way of reaching my heart, and I know for some of you as well. And so what I want to do today is look at one particular poem and take it apart to some degree about how this really, how this takes us into the practice of waking up again. And our practice is a practice of presence over and over again, waking up again in this moment. But before we start that, because I always do this, I forget about the announcements. So I know Toland was about to interrupt me and say, hey, you forgot the announcements. So let's do that. Toland, take it away. Sorry about that.
No worries. Let me just quickly jump in and just share with you all some upcoming programs at Spirit Rock in case they might spark your interest. I promise I will be brief. So from July 16th to July 17th, we have a weekend retreat with Sean Fate Oaks and Kate Johnson entitled Pleasure, Power, and Ease, Somatic Approaches to Meditation and Healing. On July 18th, we have a day-long retreat with Aaron Selovar, Charisse Minerva, and Victor Lee Lewis entitled Dharma and Myth, Buddhist, African-American, and Celtic Storytelling. And then from July 23rd to July 25th, we have a weekend retreat with Philip Moffitt and Jennifer Ward entitled Changes and Transitions in Your 50s and 60s. So those are some upcoming programs in case they interest you. And you can check out all of the other wonderful programs we have going on at Spirit Rock on our website. I'm sharing that in the chat. Now I will pass it back to you.
Thank you. I do that every time. I'm so sorry. So I'll just take the opportunity to give you a couple of announcements as well. In August, I'll be offering a four-week session on the heart called The Heart of Happiness. And it is on my website Tuesday mornings for four Tuesday mornings at 9:30 Pacific time. And we'll take a little deeper dive into the Brahmaviharas and a bigger conversation about what happiness is actually for each one of us. Not a prescribed definition, but a practice of it. So you can find that on my website along with all kinds of other things. All right, so let's dive into a poem. And this is from the great Mary Oliver. And Toland will put it up on the screen. So are you going to put it on the screen or the chat? What do we decide?
Whichever you prefer. I can put it on the screen.
Let's put it. Well, I just have to be able to. Okay, yeah, you can put it on the screen because then I can read it too from there. And then when we're done, it will be it'll be in the chat so you can follow along and we can talk about it. So this is called In Blackwater Woods, Mary Oliver. Look, the trees are turning their own bodies into pillars of light, are giving off the rich fragrance of cinnamon and fulfillment. The long tapers of cattails are bursting and floating away over the blue shoulders of the ponds. And every pond, no matter what its name is nameless now. Every year, everything I've ever learned in my lifetime leads back to this. The fires and the black river of loss, whose other side is salvation, whose meaning none of us will ever know. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it. And when the time comes to let it go, to let it go. So I've been particularly moved by this poem, and it'll be in the chat so you can refer to it. But I've been looking at this poem for a few weeks now, and it strikes me that It's a poem all about our practice. And let's just pull up, let's start from towards the end. It says, every year, everything I've ever learned in my lifetime leads back to this. The fires in the black river of loss, whose other side is salvation, whose meaning none of us will ever know. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it. And when the time comes to let it go, to let it go. So I want to take this apart. I think that we're looking at the three marks of experience, these three universal facts of life, of impermanence and dukkha and interconnection. This is pointing to awareness. This is pointing to love. And it starts with this beautiful description of notice what's around you, of cultivating this presence right in the very beginning. Look, she says, that's the direction. Look, the trees are turning their own bodies into pillars of light. This capacity to really be present. And then this line later on that says, every year, everything I've ever learned in my lifetime leads back to this. The fires of the black river of loss. So this impermanence, this loss that we are always addressing, living in, whose other side is salvation. The other side of loss is freedom. As we really turn towards what is true, the way things are, but whose meaning none of us will ever know. You know, there's a mystery that happens, isn't there? There's a mystery that happens that is unknowable in our lives. Why some things, we don't know why one thing happens or another, or maybe we do, or maybe we don't. But there is a quality of unknowability to the grace of our lives, I think. How some things happen for some people and the others happen for others. Or this, what leads to freedom? What leads to this felt salvation? The depth of loss, the depth of pain, the depths and the heights of joy and happiness that we experience, whose meanings we can't know. You know, Donald Rothberg often will say to me, and maybe you've heard him say this to you as well, just be in the mystery of it. And I think that this is what the Zen masters are talking about when they say, always keep don't know mind. Always keep don't know mind. We don't have to figure everything out. What would it be like if we didn't have to figure everything out and we could live within this place of awe and reverence and some mystery? So then let's look at this line that says, to live in this world, you must do three things. This is a directive. To love what is mortal, ourselves, each other, the earth, everything, you know, pointing to the truth of impermanence. As the Buddha said, whatever has the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. We know this is true. And in our blessing practice, in our group sharing blessing practice, many of us talked about loss, what others are struggling with. And it's going to change. That there is only the arising, the changing, and the passing away of things. And it is really, I mean, that's a big duh, but when we actually feel it inside of us or it's happening in our lives in a way that is profound, it's a big deal how this impermanence actually works in our lives. That really is only the arising, that everything arises, it hangs around, it shifts, it changes. It changes us. We are changed. We are changing all the time. And we shift. And the rub, of course, when it comes to impermanence, is that we may have a sense inside of us that it's not supposed to be like this, right? There's change and impermanence that is painful. The fires, living with the poor air quality in the whole western part of the country. And what does that mean for us? Our health, the destruction of the natural world. As David said, the difficulty, the pain of watching what's happening with this warming planet and everything being displaced and changed by it. So the rub and then the pain, that there's no such thing as certainty, right? We can be certain of uncertainty. And as we've lived through and are through coronavirus and everything that it means, we see how things come and go and they change and they hang out. And some people thrived in the last year and a half and many people didn't. And so all of these forces to love what is mortal, can we do that? This is the task, is to know our very true mortality, that we're only here for right now. Everything around here, us, is only here for right now. Izumi Shikibu was a Japanese poet, and she wrote, "Come quickly. As soon as these blossoms open, they fall. The world exists as a sheen of dew on flowers." Come quickly. As soon as these blossoms open, they fall. The world exists as a sheen of dew on flowers. It's true. It's true. And things happen that we don't expect to happen. We think we know where things are going. We think we know how it's going to be. And I was reminded a couple of days ago of the story. This is not such a heavy story, but this is how impermanence and all of these things, to love what is normal, to what is mortal, and to hold it against your bones, to be so close to your life. Many years ago, I was visiting my sister and her husband, who were living in Bologna, Italy, for about a year or so. This is a long time ago. And on the morning that I was leaving, I was catching a very early morning train, and it was winter. And so it was cold in Bologna. And the train was going to Milan, where I was going to fly home from Milan. And so we had a time. I needed to be on that train at a certain time. And I had this big, heavy suitcase. And this was before there were rolling suitcases. So it was a little bit difficult. And my brother-in-law and my sister got up early with me on this cold winter morning, and they put their heavy coats on over their pajamas. And we took a cab with my big, heavy suitcase, and we went to the train station in Bologna, and the train pulled up, and they helped me. So my brother-in-law and my sister helped me schlep this big, huge suitcase into the train and into the little train car where I was sitting, and put it up above on the racks. And all of a sudden, the doors to the train shut and the train started to go. And they spoke some Italian and went to the conductor and said, no, we have to get off. We have to get off. You can't do this. We got to go. We've got work to do. And the conductor just blew them off and said, no, you just have to go. And this was a nonstop to Milan. And that was going to be about an hour and a half. It wasn't going to be an easy thing to just get off at the next stop and take a cab back. And they were begging the conductor, and they didn't even have their wallets with them. So they opened their coats and said, "Look, we're in our pajamas. I was just coming to help my sister get on this train." So they had no ID. They had no wallets. They had no ticket, which is not cool on those trains. You need to have a ticket. Well, this was not supposed to be the way it was supposed to be, right? Like nothing always works out exactly. And truth be told, I thought it was really funny. And they didn't think it was so funny in that moment. But it was. It really was funny because we couldn't do anything about it. So we just had an early morning train ride to Milan. And when we got to the other side, I was able to get them tickets to come back. And they were really grumpy about it. on that day, but this is about 20 years ago. And I was just talking to my brother-in-law about it the other day. And we said, remember that thing that happened? And it reminded me that I've never shared that story in one of these classes. And it's just such a classic story of, we think one thing is going to happen. And then it was just this series of, you know, funny events. So, you know, can we even love that? And we probably all have these funny stories of, we think one thing is happening and we have everything so scheduled. Everything is planned out. I got it. And then boom, the door closes and the train takes off. And so we can use that as a metaphor of, it's not how I wanted it, but this is what's going to happen. And can I even hold some things lightly? You know, and I do think that within our practice is serious. It's a big deal because it changes our lives so fundamentally. But can we also hold it lightly? Let's have a sense of humor when we can. Let's recognize the things that are funny and let them be funny. That's part of our mortality as well, is to have some fun, you know, to really let the humor in. So all of these things, you know, to love what is mortal, this brings us right into the Dharma, the truth, the nature of things. And we can, lest we forget how fleeting everything is, think about your own body, your senses, and how, at what you notice at any given time is, you know, what you see, what you smell, what you taste, or look at the elements. Are you cold? Are you hot? Are you thirsty? Whatever it is, we can see how our own bodies are the perfect training ground for understanding impermanence and certainly interconnection. Kamala Master is a Dharma teacher. She talks about impermanence as the infinite immensity of impermanence. It really is infinitely immense when we look at how impermanence works and the truth of it. And sometimes we just forget that things aren't solid, that things aren't just one way. But the Buddha gives us some encouragement when he says, better than 100 years without seeing the arising and passing of things is one day lived seeing their arising and passing. That's pretty wonderful, because what he's saying is, you can be asleep for your whole life, but then it only takes a day to wake up. And that's what I mean about, here we are waking up again in this moment. It only takes one time of truly seeing the impermanence, the truth of impermanence, and we can wake up. Better than 100 years lived without seeing the arising and passing of things is one day lived seeing their arising and passing. So can we let ourselves love what is going to die? That's the question. Can we love this mortality? And then the next line, to hold it against your bones, knowing your life depends on it. That's pretty amazing. Our life depends on everything that is mortal. And it does. We are so dependent upon everyone and everything. And even if we think we're living, maybe, you know, some of us live an isolated life or not, and think that, oh, I've got it all. I've got it together. I can be totally on my own. It's not true. It's not true. We are dependent on everything. The natural world, of course, on the sun, on the way the moon pulls on the tides, how it changes the natural world, the plants, the fruit, the animals, everything. We know this. So we need to show up. And even in this showing up of cultivating this love and cultivating the awareness and experiencing the pain of its impermanence, better to show up and be present and love what is here than to turn away and be unwilling to be present for it. And as we see all of the consequences of this mega drought. We need to care for what's here and each other, to hold it against your bones and know your life depends on it. And this is the deeper practice of interconnection, interbeing, as Thich Nhat Hanh teaches. This is karma, right? Because the definition of karma is action, that everything is connected to everything else. Nothing exists in isolation. Because of this, that, because of that, this. And the thing about this that I think is so enlivening is that what we do matters. If you ever have that thought, doesn't matter what I do, nobody cares. Probably not true. You care. Hopefully you care. Others care about you. And we have the ripple effects to everything that we do. So not to doubt the importance of who you are and what you do and your presence in your own life and in the presence of others. Here's a story about this interconnection. You may know this. It's a story of an old farmer who had a horse that ran away. And his neighbor came by and said, "Oh no, your horse ran away. That's terrible." And the farmer said, "Well, you never know." And the next day the horse came back and it was leading two other horses. And the neighbor said, "That's wonderful. Look at your horse went away and came back. And now you have three horses." And the farmer said, "Yeah, you never know." And later on, his son was training one of the wild horses. And while riding the wild horse, the son fell off and broke his leg. And the neighbor came by and said, "Oh no, that's terrible." And the farmer said, "You never know." Then the Cossack army came through recruiting everybody, taking away all of the able-bodied young men. But they didn't take the farmer's son because he had a broken leg. And the neighbor came by and said, "Oh, your son was spared. That's wonderful." And the farmer said, "You never know." And so it goes on and on like that. Our lives do depend on each other and everything else, and we don't know. And this points back to the mystery of things. And then this last line that says, "And when the time comes to let it go, to let it go." Letting go of everything, the clinging, the insistence, the people, relationships, things, views, fears. This is the renunciation. But how do we do that? You know, the letting go is the hardest thing. Letting go of our opinions, of course. This is the mortality, right? To love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing things will go away. And the very beginning of the poem that says, "Look, look, pay attention, be present for exactly as things are for your life." Andrew Olensky is a Pali scholar and translator. And he talks about the importance of mindfulness and paying attention. He says, "Every mindful moment in which generosity displaces greed, compassion takes the place of hatred, and insight dislodges delusion, is a moment in which we are awake." This is what we are doing by loving what is mortal, holding it against our bones, and letting go when it's time to let it go. That is a moment of mindfulness in which the generosity that is woven into this understanding of interconnection and impermanence, every mindful moment in which generosity displaces greed, compassion takes the place of hatred, and insight dislodges delusion, is a moment in which we are awake, waking up again. Because this is what happens in our practice, is we uproot these three difficulties, these unwholesome states of greed, ill will, and delusion, and we come into the practice in the presence of awareness, loving awareness, generosity, all of these beautiful aspects of the heart. And as far as letting go, Suzuki Roshi gives a really important teaching when he says true renunciation, true letting go, is not giving up things of the world, but knowing they go away. True renunciation is not giving up things of the world, but knowing they go away. And that's hard. It's not conceptual, is it? We keep it conceptual because the knowing that things go away is painful, because we know we will lose those we love. We will lose so much. So this brings me, I want to take another 5 or 6 minutes, and then we'll talk with each other, into this practice of the 5 daily reflections that are so critically important for understanding interconnection and impermanence and love, I think. And these are practices you can bring into your life every day. The first one says, I'm subject to aging. I've not gone beyond aging. We know this, right? Nothing stays the same, our lives and especially our bodies. How do we see this aging in ourselves and others? And what are all the conditioned responses that we have to aging? I could say a lot more about this, but in the interest of time, I'm just going to give you these. We are subject to aging. It's not a mistake. I am subject to illness. I've not gone beyond illness. As obvious as this is, right? We get sick and we resist it. Are we in contention with the conditions of our lives? It's heart-wrenching. It's really hard. But we go through these cycles of illness and wellness all the time until the end of our lives. We are not exempt. That's really the bottom line here. We are not exempt from impermanence, interconnection. I am subject to death. I've not gone beyond death. Well, how do we manage that? You know, it's said that all of our spiritual practice is a reckoning of our mortality to prepare for our own deaths. How do we manage loss? This is our work. This is our work. This is a piece from Steve Jobs shortly before he died. Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fell away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you're going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking that you have something to lose. You are already naked. There's no reason not to follow your heart. This is so important. There is no reason not to follow your heart. We can make up reasons, but we need the courage to do it. The fourth, I think this is really the pith here. I will experience loss. I will be separated from all that I hold dear. I have not gone beyond this. We are not exempt. Everything changes. We don't want to face that we will be separated from everything and everyone we hold dear. Either I'm going to leave my husband first or he's going to leave me first. I mean, through death. That's going to happen. Same with my children, you know, same with my ailing dog. I know she's going to not be here too much longer. And that's the pain, right? And so when we can turn to a place of acknowledging this mortality and loving what is here, because it's what supports us, we hold that to our bones. When that's not gripping, that holding to our bones just means that we are really deeply understanding our lives. When we do that, we get freed up. This is the liberation. This is the difference between how we go from the second noble truth to the third noble truth that says there's a cause of our suffering, but there's the end of our suffering when we accept how things truly are. The fifth one is, I am the owner of my karma. My actions, whatever I do for better or worse, to that will I fall heir. I've not gone beyond that. So this just means what I do matters. I take responsibility for my life. And we start to understand that our happiness and unhappiness is up to us, because we can have agency in what we do and what we don't do. My happiness and unhappiness depend upon my own actions, not on anybody else's. That is a deep teaching and a deep practice. And the last one, which is not one of the five recollections, because I already gave you five, so here's number six. And I don't know where this came from in the Buddha's teachings, but I appreciate it a lot. I am of the nature to be born. So you think about all the myriad conditions that had to come together for us to actually be here. Our parents met, their parents met, their parents met, you know, all of our ancestors, and here we are. But I'm not actually talking about this in terms of taking that literally. I think about it more going all the way back to what Ron said about trying different kinds of meditation, being curious. We can continue to grow. We can be born again into this moment, fresh, alive, willing, curious, present. That's an amazing gift that we have in human consciousness, is to continue to grow and learn. So even though with these five recollections of aging, illness, death, loss, being responsible for ourselves, that being responsible for our actions, we also get to keep growing and learning. And that is really exciting to me. It is, I hope, to you too. And I want to end with this piece from Pema Chodron, whose birthday is today. Pema is 85 today. She says, "If your everyday practice is to open to all your emotions, to all the people you meet, to all the situations you encounter without closing down, trusting that you can do that, then that will take you as far as you can go. And then you'll understand all the teachings anyone has ever taught." So trust yourself, trust your practice, come back to where we began. Know that this is good. To love what is mortal, to hold it close to your bones because your life depends on it. And when it's time to let it go, to let it go. So thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Let's take some time to talk with each other. We have about 10 minutes.